¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Yeah. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. Yeah. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
Hello, America. It's your new favorite podcast here.
Yes, it's James and Andy, two-fourths of the British podcast No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do facts. We do weird facts, fun facts, facts you've never heard before. James, give us a fact.
Did you know you may be able to cure chronically blocked noses with a snot transplant?
Lovely, lovely facts.
If you want to hear us, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We'll see you there.
There it is. When that bass crashes in, you know it's time to begin another episode of DLC, your downloadable conversation for the week, wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening. We're so glad you've chosen to tune into DLC. We're right there with you. If you got your commute, if you're sitting in your car in traffic right now, hating your life, we're so glad you tuned us in. We're going to help you out. Also, if you're working out or you're on a run, we're going to give you some gaming goodness in your ear holes to maybe help you through that workout, because DLC is delivered to you the way we like it to be, and that is completely free. Thanks to our sponsors this week, Pond5 and Hover. They made that possible, bringing the show to you. DLC is all about games. Games in their many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles, and also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with 2 N's and 1 T, and I'm joined, as always, by my friend, slash co-host, slash nemesis, the guy who always knew there was water on Mars, because he saw it while he was playing Destiny, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hello, Jeff. Good to be here. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. I'm kind of actually really stoked about this whole water on Mars. We have a blood moon last night, water on Mars today, The Martian coming out soon, which is a fantastic movie. It's all about space. Let's get back there, huh? Let's do it. No?
No one can hear you scream, though.
That's where no one can hear you scream. This is not a space podcast. It is a gaming podcast. And, you know, people always ask me what DLC stands for, and I always have to tell them it's Downloadable Kanata, Downloadable Christian. But this week, oh my gosh, we're excited because we have a brand new guest. And DLC stands for Discover You Like Chores, because we have the founder of Chore Monster, Mr. Chris Bergman. Welcome, Chris.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. I just want to say Cincinnati Bengals, 3-0.
Yeah, man. Impressive come from behind win. The fourth quarter was crazy in that game. I was very impressed. Christian, your Texans are off the schneid, too. They were 0-2, right? Now they're 1-2, like my Niners.
Yeah, the Texans-Niners worst bowl is coming up, and I'm looking forward to watching neither team score points.
May the worst team lose. Okay, Chris, so I referenced the fact that you're the founder of Chore Monster. I think this is a fascinating idea and a fascinating concept and a fascinating product. Tell us a little bit about what Chore Monster gamifies.
Yeah, man. Thanks so much. So Chore Monster is a web and mobile app that allows parents and kids to actually enjoy doing chores. So kids gain points, turn them in for real life rewards that their parents provide, like an hour of Xbox, television show, canoe trip, sharp knives, you know, really whatever a parent wants to give a child. And then on top of that, kids also can earn over 100 different interactive monsters or a consolation prize like a jar of farts, dirty underwear, stinky socks, that kind of thing. For us, like, our ultimate goal our ultimate mission is to turn every home into a joyful place. And we do that by helping kids get good stuff for doing things around the house.
It's cool, man. You have become our buddy, and you are an avid gamer, and we wanted to have you on the show. But I also think it's an interesting perspective to come from somebody that is using game theory and creating game-like hooks into something that is inherently not fun, like doing chores. I think your perspective today is going to be really interesting.
Yeah, man. I mean, so for me in particular, it's about behavior modification, and it comes from my own behavior modification, right? Like I'm somebody who is lazy and hates labor, and I needed to find a way to make those things fun, and found that applied game mechanics is the best route to do that for me in particular. And then, you know, we launched this thing in 2013 and on iOS, we launched on Android last year. And I'm just blown away by how effective it is that we didn't realize what we were building at the time. Right. And only after the fact are we like, oh, wow, this like there are people that this is really helpful for, you know, especially kids that are having behavioral issues and challenges and, you know, just kind of giving parents and kids an opportunity to talk about the things in their house and give kids a voice for, you know, the things they may want.
That's awesome, man. And again, it's called Chore Monster, and it's available on iOS and Android. Is that right?
Yep. iOS, Android, Windows 8, Kindle, a few other things as well. Cool. I'm trying really hard to get it on the Oculus. I don't know if we'll be able to pull that off. We'll try.
Yeah, we got a lot of stuff to talk about this week, but if you are sick of us talking about VR, this is not the episode for you. Oculus Connect 2 happened this week. We will be talking about it. But guess what? I'm a man of my word, and we also played a lot of Destiny this week. So there will be Destiny talk later on in the playlist. So fear not, Destiny lovers and VR haters. If you're a VR lover, though, get excited, because we're about to jump into Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. Chris, you are our guest. You get first pick. People can submit stories also using our hashtag, DLCSOTW, on the Twitter, or by visiting our subreddit, which is 5x5dlc.reddit.com. And Chris, what is your Story of the Week to kick us off?
Oh, man. I mean, my Story of the Week is definitely just VR in general. All the stuff that came out of Oculus Connect 2, the Gear VR coming in November for Christmas, retail at $99. To me, it's a big deal. I think it's going to sell a ton of phones. I think there's going to be a lot of kids that want VR that are hitting the age where their own mobile phone is something that their parents are looking for. And, you know, to be able as a parent to say, hey, we're not only are we going to give you a phone, but we're going to give you access to VR as well. I think that's huge. I think that's huge for the Christmas season, the holiday season in general. And then Minecraft coming to VR as well. You know, I remember a couple years ago when Notch tweeted out like, hey, we were in talks to do a Minecraft version with Oculus. And he, like, his tweet was literally, I just canceled that deal. Facebook creeps me out. Right. Mm-hmm. And here we are 2 years later, and Carmack has been able to bring mine to Oculus. So to me, those are, I don't know, man, it's just, I'm super stoked. I'm stoked for VR. I think this holiday season, that is what is going to happen, is it's going to be, it is going to be the holiday season of VR.
Yeah, I am also very excited. We'll step through these stories one at a time, because I think you're right. They're both pretty big. Gear VR for $99 is a pretty tantalizing deal. It's the first time, honestly, that I have decided that I would want a Samsung phone. This is a major reason, a major temptation to get a Samsung Galaxy phone for me, and from my perspective. And $99 is a pretty great you know, number to slap onto VR. Of course, you have to have the phone, which is not cheap. But, you know, people justify phone purchases pretty easily, and $99 extra dollars. The cool thing is I went down to Oculus Connect 2 this weekend, and or this week, I should say, and I got a chance to try out that Gear VR headset, and I was very impressed with it. I'll talk more in the playlist about the specific games I got to try, but just from a hardware standpoint, I really thought it would be a lot less impressive than what I've played with the Vive and the Oculus and Morpheus,
which is now called PlayStation VR. But it isn't. It, you know, obviously the games themselves don't have the horsepower behind them, so you're not going to get quite the graphical beauty that you would get from a high-end PC. But I would say the VR experience itself, the motion tracking, the lack of nausea, all of that stuff, I really couldn't tell any difference between using the Gear VR headset and using one of the what will be very much more expensive VR headsets. And I think that is a huge plus. And I think that it's very important that the experience that people get slapping their phone into this $99 headset is a positive one. It's very comfortable. It's very light. I found it to be extremely comfortable. I used it for quite a long time, and I didn't have any problems with how it felt. And there's no tether to it. There's no wires because you just stick the phone inside it. And I think that mobile VR experience is pretty exciting. Christian, tell me why I'm wrong.
I mean, you're not wrong per se. It is exciting. And I hate being the Grinch who stole VR. It is exciting. This thing isn't going to do it. When Chris says that this is going to sell a lot, nope. There's no way. There's no way this is going to, maybe a lot is 10, if that's what you mean by a lot. The market isn't ready for this type of VR. The cell phone VR doesn't deliver the VR experience that is promised when people talk about VR, because the HTC or the Oculus, where you're in this world and you're doing all this cool stuff and you're playing Doom, I don't know, whatever it is. And cell phones are super powerful, but every time Samsung or Apple unveils their new phone, the first thing gamers are trolling about is like, well, still can't play Xbox 360 quality games. Lol. Yeah, right. And it still has a ton of hurdles. It's comfortable. It's nice that they're doing it. I love that they're doing it, but this will not be the thing that sells gangbusters. It's complicated. It's burdensome to put on. You're carrying all this stuff around with you or putting it onto your head, and you're killing your phone's battery life, that when your phone is your phone, you're not going to be using it for this type of thing. I am sorry. But I am willing, Mr. Kanata. I don't know. We'll come up with numbers. I will bet both of you, $25, $50, that this thing does not move the needle in terms of the general popular appeal of VR one bit. One bit.
Well, I don't know how you measure that, and if we're talking wagering. I actually kind of agree with you that I don't think it's going to be a titanic shift in people getting on board, but...
Well, I think it will be a titanic shift just after it hits the iceberg.
No, I think that this is actually, contrary to your premise, I think this is actually a great way to introduce people to VR, because literally, like, all you need is this headset, and it is a freestanding device that you can carry around with you in your backpack, and all you do is slap your phone in it, and you can have somebody try it. And I think that trying it is really believing it, and I think that's the thing. Chris, I'm curious what you think about this other announcement they mentioned with Gear VR supporting Netflix and Twitch. Do you think people are going to want to watch movies in a VR space?
Well, I think a couple things are going to happen specifically with movie watching. So Twitch is kind of a bizarre thing in and of itself, and I want to table that for a second. But Netflix, to me, And the Gear experience of watching movies, the best instance I've seen of that is on an airplane. You look like a tool, which I think it's granted at this point, we can all accept that if we own a Gear, and I own a Gear VR, I have one of the innovator editions now. And we know that we're going to be mouth breathers watching this thing, but I've worn it on a plane before. Right. And it's so immersive, and you put the headset on, you're sitting in a theater, you're watching a movie as though you're in a movie theater, right? And for me, I think especially people that have anxiety with travel or those type of things, to be able to watch movies in general on the Gear VR is going to be awesome. Netflix, there's a couple of hurdles there, right? Because like that doesn't help in any travel situations, because you still need to be tethered to some sort of Wi-Fi or, you know, any sort of streaming service. And Twitch is in the same boat, right? Like if the question is, and this is for Gear specifically, not necessarily VR in general, but like Gear is a travel VR unit, right? And in the same way that you game in the Gear VR as opposed to the Oculus, it's, to me, that's similar to like mobile gaming versus you know, PC gaming. And so the experience is going to be mobile. And it's the case, like any sort of streaming service, I think isn't going to you know, help or hinder it one way or the other. I think what'll be fascinating, you know, how can I watch downloaded movies on my phone on the airplane in an immersive environment where I can ignore the fact that there's some hairy dude's elbow touching my elbow, right?
Yeah.
I think that's where the value is there. But like as far as the thing that I find interesting with Gear VR being $99 is like when you look at the Android phones, the Samsung phones that that will support Gear, is they tend to be the higher end phones, right? And if you look at the demographic of owners that have those phones, they're typically tinkerers. So they're early adopters. You know, so, I mean, we're talking the S6 Edge, the Galaxy Note 5. Like, these are phones that tinkerers typically own, right? You know, I run a tech company, right? And we literally have a wall of Android devices. And, you know, my engineers have a Note 5 right now, almost all of them. And that's their personal phone that they love to tinker with, right? And I think these are the early adopters that are going to be the ones that are like, I am buying Gear VR so I can share it with my friends, because they're going to be the what's the word that I want? They're going to be the people that want to tell their friends of Gear. And so yeah. I will take that back, and I bet they at least do 150,000, 200,000 units this Christmas.
Wow, that's a bold prediction. I would love for that to happen. I would love for people to adopt it in that high number. I'm certainly excited about it, having tried it. And you said you have the Innovator Edition. The one that they were showing at Oculus Connect 2 is 22% lighter and has better feel overall. And I think that makes a huge difference too. And, you know, talking about on the plane, people are already wearing ridiculous sleeping night masks, right? So I guess there's that. You don't mind looking goofy with your weird neck pillow and your you know, sleeping mask. It's already silliness, but yeah, I mean, I was just very impressed with it. I think that price point is pretty attractive for people that already have the phones, and we'll have to see. The other story that you brought up is Minecraft coming to VR. Christian, do you think that's a big deal? I mean, I think you know, Chris is somebody that deals with what kids like. Minecraft certainly is what kids like. And getting them into the VR space, despite Notch's reservations, might be a real positive thing. What do you think, Christian?
I think it's a nice notch on the belt. Notch. I think that they need Minecraft 2 or whatever the next, you know, unpredictable, huge viral hit is. Adding something that's already a hit on every device onto another device isn't necessarily going to be the reason to get this product. I believe Microsoft, the retail edition for the Xbox 360, the Minecraft there is still traditionally one of the best sellers in NPDs every month, while it's still available on Xbox One and PS4 and everywhere else. Like, this isn't the game that is pushing people to upgrade their tech. And if it adds something, you know, really adds something to that game, I don't think it does. You're just turning your head to look around your creation instead of dragging your mouse to look at your creation. And that game, to me, is almost better from, you know, higher up in aerial view. You're building the Enterprise, not walking around the Enterprise, manually placing each brick one at a time. I'm happy to be wrong there. But no, Jeff, I do not think that it is going to be the thing that sparks it with the younger generation.
Yes, I think Minecraft is a big deal. I think certainly John Carmack thought it was a big deal. He said that it was his quest trying to get Minecraft onto Oculus, that he was pestering Notch and pestering Microsoft and trying to work it out through lawyers, you know, which is kind of that's really the challenge. He said it wasn't a technical challenge. It was a legal challenge. And I think that could be really cool. You know, we've already seen an impressive Minecraft demo on the on the HoloLens, and I think that Minecraft in VR could be really, really interesting. You know, there's some other announcements from Oculus Connect, the keynote, the fact that they are working on these Oculus-ready PCs, so there'll be a sticker or some sort of notification saying, hey, this PC is ready to go. It'll give you a great Oculus experience. I think that's a positive thing. So people know if they want to get into VR, what kind of PCs they can get and get them in. I think that's great. And they showed a lot of really awesome games. You know, they showed that Bullet Time demo, which I thought was pretty cool, showing a very traditional shootery kind of game done in VR and what makes it special with the touch controllers. I mean, grabbing a rocket out of the air, it's pretty awesome. And I played some other stuff too. I'll talk a little bit more in the playlist about that. But I thought overall a pretty exciting conference. It's a little bit of a bummer that, you know, all these devices are coming in 2016, except for the Gear VR itself. But I'm certainly very excited about what VR has to offer. And I think that even more so with the touch controllers, those controllers are just so cool. I don't know. Did you guys see the Valve demo with the hyper-realistic, photo-realistic environments where you're like in that office that looks like the actual real-world office, and then a portal robot shows up, and then he's teleported into like an outdoor green rolling hill cliffside area? Did you guys see that?
No, I missed it, man.
I did not.
Oh, it's so incredible. It's really, really something. We're on the verge of something, guys. I know Christian thinks it's farther away than I do, but I'm very excited about it. Lots of cool discussion in the chat room about it as well. People are conflicted, and I think that the skepticism melts away a lot if you try these things in a great environment. Yes, it might be hard to have them be a great environment in your home, but we shall see. Christian, what is your story of the week?
For me, it has to be what SAG-AFTRA, the Actors Union, is trying to do for video game VO actors. And this started making the rounds last week, or early last week, maybe right after last week's show. And it's interesting because Will Wheaton had tweeted out his kind of thoughts on it. And if you don't know him, Star Trek does a lot of VO in games as well. Big time geek, board game guy, and video game voice actor, among other things. And I'm curious where you two fall on this issue. Just to paint the picture, right now there really isn't any agreement between voice actors and the large billion-dollar companies they work for. And they haven't been willing to negotiate on what seems like trivial matters. And so now, you know, the union is really trying to get involved and trying to get some working conditions for them in terms of vocally stressful sessions being limited to around 2 hours, but also trying to get residual payments for the actors. It kind of blew up. I think it was GTA 4 where one of the voice actors, you know, I guess was naive in what they expected the game to do, but just got a session fee and a buyout and then saw the money the game was making and was like, wait a minute, this seems crazy. And so I don't know if that's necessarily the right part. I think residuals are nice for actors. I think good quality voice acting does make a game a million times better. But I think more interesting to me are trying to get minimum level work environment, quality of life things that let these actors keep doing what they're doing past grinding out 12-hour sessions of yelling commands over and over and over again and frying their vocal cords. Jeff, you are an actor. Chris, you have experience with voice actors. Where do you guys fall on this? Chris, do you have a strong opinion one way or the other, or is it just kind of a little outside your realm of expertise?
Oh, no. It's very much inside my realm, just from the sense that I do hire voice actors pretty regularly, or we do them ourselves. My worry, though, is that both you guys are in the entertainment business and you're not going to like what I have to say.
I will like what you have to say, and then I will disagree with it.
You know, for me, as a guy that owns a corporation, literally, technically, my biggest challenge is as a creator and a maker is always to do as little budget as possible, to get the most out of my dollar. Right. And as an entrepreneur, like unions are, in my opinion, like they halt, people making things. They tend to, come in and create a situation which makes it not feasible for people to go and build the stuff that they want to build from a budget standpoint, right? And I think I don't think it's fair to, you know, if it's Activision or EA to think any differently. Like, just because I'm a small startup, like I think the corporations have the same issues as well. And I my worry with this, from the perspective of a guy that owns a company and runs a company, is that this is going to create the already astronomical budgets that we have for AAA games and add another 20 or 30% on top of that. You know, and I think at that point, because like, I mean, my hypothesis is guys like Nolan North get paid very well to do what they do. Like, they're incredibly talented. You know, he himself made Destiny 100 times better. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. We're not talking about the Nolan Norths of the world, right? There's like three of those. So we're talking about the dudes that go in and scream for a living and tear up their vocal cords and get, you know, $300. That's the reality of VO work in video games. And I should definitely say there's a huge caveat to all this, huge grain of salt you should take, because I am a proud member of SAG-AFTRA, and I actively seek employment as a voiceover artist, right? So I have a horse in this race, and I'm not going to be impartial about it. But, you know, if taking off the table just sort of the idea of unions in general, and, you know, that's a political argument I think that we're not really prepared to make on this show, but I happen to be pro-union personally, but I feel like in this particular case, you're seeing these very high-profile people, which is the way SAG works, is right, is that the high-profile people have to step up to the plate and say, hey, I'm willing to go on strike and not work to try to get things better for the little guy. And that's the idea of unions, is like, you want the big people. Well, the little people have to sort of, we have to have a rising tide that lifts all boats, right? So we need to have better conditions, or stuff that is asked of people in these rooms that is harmful to their vocal cords, and they're kind of paid crappily. And people can point to the, you know, the big high profile, you know, the Patrick Stewart walking into Oblivion and getting paid a whole bunch of money. But that's not the reality of most of the people who make their living doing VO.
But I don't understand, like, all right, I don't mean to jump in. I don't understand how, like, if you get paid $300 to scream for 12 hours, like, you also have the choice to not take that job.
Right. And I think that's the idea is, you're saying supply outweighs demand. You're saying that there's so many people willing to go in and scream for 12 hours that we'll just find somebody else. And what the union is saying is, okay, well, you can't have any of the best people in the world at that. So go for it, and we'll see who wins. Like, if you are willing to scrape the bottom of the barrel on the talent, then that is the idea of going on strike, right? Is if you don't want the best of the best to do this, if you think that any old person can do it for any amount of money, and that the premium of the people who are trained and effective and will deliver the kind of quality that you're looking for, if you're not willing to pay for that, then those people aren't willing to work for less, right? That's the idea of what a union does.
5 days ago at Will Wheaton's website, willwheaton.net, he posted a blog, "This is why I support SAG after strike authorization for video games, and it's not about money." And to me, I mean, I hear both of you guys talking about money, and certainly I think residuals would be nice or even higher pay, but people in the chat are mentioning how, you know, these big billion-dollar companies don't treat their devs worth anything. Why will they treat the VO actors worth anything as well? And I agree with that sentiment that there is a larger problem here with how games are made often. I mean, there's a problem with how iPhones are made. There's a problem with how the rug in your house is made, right? I mean, these are bigger issues than can be solved on a 90-minute video game podcast, unfortunately. But what I think is interesting about, you know, Will's post and about getting VO actors some recognition is, you know, he talks about how they don't have time limits for the amount of time that you can go in there and scream and yell. And when the actors try to complain about that, they're fired. And so his thought is, and I'm paraphrasing Will's post, so please go and read that for specifics, but it's just getting these companies to the bargaining table at all. to talk about some workplace protections, because more and more of these games are these huge productions. And if you're not going to protect the talent that's doing it, even if you are just a screamer, right, and you're not, it doesn't matter who you are, you're not Nolan North, you're still important in making these games better, and you've made a living for yourself doing this, and they hired you for a reason, because at some point they thought you're the guy to scream "Commandos, go!" Or whatever the command is. The fact that there are so little workplace protections for the type of work these people are doing, and to then assume that it's not demanding or challenging because, oh, well, you're just talking for an hour. Look at musicians and the number of times, I'll get some flack for this, but the number of times Celine Dion has had to cancel a tour because, you know, your throat is a muscle like anything else and you can only do so much with it. So again, like Jeff, I too am a member of the union and have a horse in this race. But I feel like the bigger issue is bringing these billion-dollar companies to the table to talk in some form or fashion. I think that's important.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bigger issue, as you said, than we have time really to get into. But it is interesting, and it could potentially change a lot of the way that games are made, for good or ill, depending on your point of view. So it's going to be something to definitely keep an eye on. And I think, you know, I'm glad we had different points of view expressed on this show. I think it's important to look at it from all sides, and I certainly am not able to be objective. So also, Chris, I'm available for VO work if you need
hey, anybody.
All right,
absolutely. But I need you to scream for 12 hours. That's the only catch.
I could do that, and I work cheap.
Wait, Jeff, what happened?
Hey, if you need amazing sound effects, music, imagery, even moving pictures for your online project or media project of any kind, can I interest you in our sponsor? Pond5. Oh my gosh, Pond5 is great. One of the best things about Pond5 is that they provide royalty-free music and imagery and all kinds of stuff, sound effects, really anything you might need, motion graphics templates, all kinds of stuff. But they also compensate the artists really well for it. It's great. They have some of the highest payouts in the industry, meaning you're going to find high quality and diverse content. And you don't have to pay. It's license free. It's royalty free. A license that is royalty free. So you're not going to have to pay it ongoing. You can create all kinds of really interesting content, plug and play their motion graphics templates, their music, their sound effects, their video clips, their images. And it's affordable. Even more so because we're going to give you 25% off your next purchase. All you got to do is visit pond5.com. That's P-O-N-D-5.com, the number 5.com, and use our promo code. Our promo code's DLC. And check out their library. If you're building a website, if you're doing videos, YouTube stuff, and you need music, anything that you might need, I bet you could find on Pond5. So pond5.com. And then the promo code DLC will give you 25% off. That's pretty great. Pretty, pretty great. Check it out. Thanks to Pond5 for supporting our show. Guys, my story of the week, I'm definitely on the VR train for story of the week, but there's some really interesting other stuff. Christian, I'm very surprised that you didn't pick out this notion that the Vita might be Sony's final mobile gaming device. They're saying
there's a... Pick story of the week my grandma died. That's not the thing I want to talk about for 10 minutes.
is it that depressing to you that there's not going to be a successor to the Vita? Evidently, Shuhei Yoshida, the chief of worldwide studios for Sony Entertainment, said that a successor to the PlayStation Vita is not likely because the climate is not healthy for mobile gaming ready devices, because people have phones in their pocket, kind of what we've been talking about for the last 5 years. No surprise to anyone, I'm guessing, with what, you know, the support they've shown for the Vita, the sales of the Vita. It's not a surprise, but it kind of sucks to hear the dude come out and say it explicitly, right?
Yeah, I don't know if phones, I mean, I know it's the reason they give, so it's hard for me to, as a lay person, to say that is the reason. I think mobile phone gaming is even bigger in Japan than it is here in terms of biting away from the handheld market. But I feel like did I say it on this show, or maybe it was when Chris and I were just talking when we were hanging out last time he was in town. I feel like the bigger problem for Sony is they make this great tech, but they don't have a way to sell it or market it or know what to do with it or why it's even included in their tech. And so I think there are larger problems for Sony's handheld division than the mobile phone market spreading. But again, that's just me. Chris, you're not even a Vita guy, are you? You believe in VR, but you won't put a beautiful, formerly OLED screen in your pocket?
Vita's garbage. I think what is great about this is that Yoshida's saying, hey, we have a core focus, and that core focus is no longer a handheld. I mean, I think from a leadership standpoint, to be able to make that decision and move forward is the absolute best thing that he as a leader can do for Sony, to say, look, PS is where we're focused, you know, and there's accessories, PS4 and what have you, but like, our consoles where we're keeping everything, and like, by doing that, they're able to bring the whole studio together, the whole group together on a core focus, as opposed to splitting that off and saying, hey, look at this, you know, beautiful OLED screen that nobody wants to make software for. I mean, I still can't get over the fact that the PS4 is an x86 architecture. Like, they have, when you take a look back over the past couple of years at Sony's steps towards getting to where they are today, which, I mean, I don't know about this, but from where I sit, like, they're the undeniable leader in, you know, the console race. Like, that has been so purposeful, and this is just another step in that direction.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting. I'm certainly not surprised that, you know, everybody's got a gaming device in their pocket. And just because it has twin sticks on it, which I think makes it better for gaming, doesn't mean that people are going to start putting it in their pocket. Christian, in the chat room, somebody asked what your perfect successor to the PSP would be, what the Vita would be. What would you want? Do you want them to continue making that, have a new one that's just more powerful? What would you want?
I mean,
Stats One asked that, by the way.
Well, yeah, the dream is more power, more battery, and a button layout that maps the console controller button layout. So all of the triggers, all of the clickies, and as powerful as it can be with the battery that lasts as long as possible. The real answer, though, is what Chris was hitting on, which is killer software, which is the same problem, you know, the chicken or the egg thing we're talking about with VR, where really the 3DS is not as powerful as the Vita, doesn't have the same buttons as the Vita, doesn't utilize the DS. You know, Jeff, you had talked about how by making it 3D, they kind of limited one of the cool things about the old DS in terms of the book and interacting with your individual character on the play screen and this, that, and the other. But they've had really, really great, only available on 3DS software that the Vita simply hasn't had. The Vita's had some incredible games, but their exclusives aren't system sellers, in my opinion. The indie games play great on it, but you can play those anywhere else. And so for me, it's that you want it to be as powerful with the longest battery as possible, and then an experience that is only available on that console. The bigger problem, though, I think, is that handheld gaming isn't as prevalent as it used to be because more TVs are cheaper, consoles are smaller, and more people have a way to game not on the one family TV. That growing up, for me at least, there was one TV that, you know, we were lucky to have. And if you wanted to do something else, maybe you could scrape together and afford to get a Game Boy to entertain yourself. Now there are a million other ways to entertain yourselves, and I feel like more and more homes have, you know, four TVs, it seems like. It's crazy.
But it's really about the fact that there are tablets and phones. I mean, that's what it's about. If you want a game on the go, there is no shortage of ways to game on a device you already have in your pocket. You don't have to think to bring your other gaming device. The 3DS is smart because they're saying, hey, we're aiming at a market that is pre-phone. a lot of kids are getting phones younger and younger, as I'm sure Chris will attest. But I think the truth is that parents probably feel a lot more comfortable giving their kids this more durable clamshell, less expensive gaming device to carry around with them, and that it's aimed right at all the software is right for them. and they can't just hop onto a store and buy things willy-nilly. It's a, you know, it's a walled garden. And I think that that's where the 3DS is doing better. But well, the truth is, if you've got a phone, you've got a gaming device already.
Well, I mean, I'd go a step further down that argument, though, and say that most of the kids, I'm so outdated, it's not even necessarily gaming on their phone as much as it is Snapchat, Twitter, Facebook, you know, whatever. More and more, you see people sitting in a waiting room. Yeah, people are playing threes or dots or whatever they're playing or Minecraft, but there's a million other things that you can be doing that aren't gaming that fit that time waster role. You could be updating your chores for your kids. You know, there are literally millions of businesses that couldn't have existed 10 years ago because these phones weren't around. And that is taking away from gaming, not other games per se.
Yeah, not only that, like from a handheld standpoint, like the biggest competitor for handhelds isn't just mobile devices, but it's hand-me-down mobile devices. So it's not just the fact that like, hey, you know, Apple has a new iPhone out. It's that mom doesn't have to go buy another iPhone for their kid. They can just give them their old one because they're upgrading. So like you have these life cycles that are happening inside the home and the kids are becoming a part of that life cycle. And so now a kid, you know, actually, I mean, it's last time we checked, it was 86% of kids under the age of 12 in the U.S. have some sort of they own a handheld device, a mobile device of some sort, right? And the reality is most of those devices are pre-owned from the parents. They're not even devices that the parents are going out and buying. So you're getting an entire inventory of the market that's just disappearing because there's no reason for a parent to go out and buy that for their kid when they can just give them their phone.
That's a fantastic point. And that just doesn't exist with dedicated gaming handhelds. You know, you can convert the phone that you've been using for a year or 2 years into your kid's gaming device, and it doesn't work the other way. I think that's an excellent point. All right, like my vote is to move on to the playlist because we've got a lot of great games to talk about. Was there any other news stories that we have to hit? Christian, I know you added a few here to the list.
We never have to hit anything, buddy. Let's get to that playlist and talk about Destiny.
Sounds good.
Yes, please. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week?
Tell us on the playlist. The playlist is where we talk about the games we've been playing. I promised I would play Destiny this week. I did. We have all been playing it. Chris, let's start with you. But I want to do it in the context of this email that was sent in. We got an email sent to us. You can send emails to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. This was sent in by Justin from Dallas. He says, hi, guys. I played Destiny when it came out last year, and I did not dig it at all. Didn't even finish the main story missions. It was empty, lifeless, and you could tell this was a shell of the game they wanted to make. I picked up the Legendary Edition last week, and it's like a totally different game. I'm loving it, and I'm not even to the Taken King content yet. Starting from the beginning again with the new interface, way more loot drops, missions from both the smaller DLCs, it's just a totally different game. I'm hoping you guys found this new Destiny as significant as I have. I'd encourage anyone to give it a second shot. What do you think, Chris? You agree?
I do. Justin in Dallas. First of all, I apologize for Romo, but pretty glad to deal with him. Second of all, I had the exact same experience happen to me. So my first exposure to Destiny was actually in 2013 at GDC. They had an art panel where it was Joe Stanton, the previous writer for Destiny, who left in 2014, went up on stage, talked about, you know, this was the first real exposure to the game, talked about how they're trying to merge fantasy and sci-fi and this whole world that they have built. And I was sucked in. Like, I'm like, everything that you're showing me is everything that I want to see in a game. The game came out, and it felt like a little bit different version of Halo. Like, I bought the game. I played for maybe 4 or 5 hours, shut it off, didn't touch it until 2.0. So I had a couple guys in our office that have been playing seriously for a while, and kept bugging me to play. You got to, because I'm a WoW nerd, right? Like I love MMOs. Immersive storytelling specifically, which was one of my frustrations with Destiny in the first place. And he said, you got to come back for 2.0. and it was like I came back to a completely different game, man. I especially with Taken King. So I've actually finished the main story mission completely, hit level 40, which is the cap, and have started on building my light levels and doing the Taken King. They've just said, look, we understand. Here's how I feel that what they're telling me as a player is, like, we understand that we build a world that we don't really understand, and we kind of just like made a lot of stuff up and made it sound cool, like Vault of Glass. And we're just going to table that for right now. I feel like they're going to get back to a lot of that. Like, I still want to know the backstories of the Awoken and the Exo, for example, right? And I think we'll get back to that. But, like, here's a concise narrative about a king. And you disagree?
No, I want to hear your concise narrative. My concise narrative, mine's even more concise. Go to a place, kill all the stuff on it.
I think you guys are hitting on my exact issue with, I think we need to define terms when it comes to storytelling. Because I think that from my perspective, what makes storytelling good is different than maybe what we're talking about, right? Some people look at a story in a video game and say, oh, the story's good because the backstory of the Awoken and the galactic conflict and da, da, da. No. What I'm looking for is, what am I doing right now and why am I doing it and where am I going? Like, tell me what I'm doing. I don't care about 3,000 years of history of this planet, that this amazing book that you wrote in order to design your game with like all the different dynasties and alien cultures and everything. That's all wonderful. That's backstory. That ain't story. Tell me what I'm doing, why I'm doing it, and make that interesting. If what I'm doing is walking into a place, killing everyone there, and then pressing the X button to deploy my little robot thing, that's not a story. That's not a story.
Chris will defend better than I will. But to be fair, Jeff, when it was telling the story, when we were going places, you and I were just talking to each other. We weren't listening to the story. So we can't say there wasn't story as they're explaining what we're doing and why we're going there. And you and I are talking about, we should stream more often. Oh, so-and-so in the Twitch stream says, are you guys going to do it? Yep, we're going to do it on Monday. Okay, yeah. But we weren't listening.
No. I agree with you. We weren't listening to the cutscene. But what I'm saying is, if you're creating an MMO type experience, give me quests that are interesting. Give me something to do. Give me, create what is ostensibly a campaign-like mission where I have to sneak into the enemy base and do this or that, or you know, I'm looking at a million, I could give you a million examples from MMOs of quests that are different that use the same mechanics. It's still going and killing stuff and looting things and using the mechanics of the game, but at least it's contextualizing it in a way that is interesting and
Chris,
not
be more articulate than me, please.
So I think Jeff, you make a great point about the semantics of talking about game design in general. And I think your problems, I think there are a ton of problems with world building in this game. That goes back to Destiny 1.0, right? But the Taken King in particular, what I love about it is there's a king that's pissed that you killed his son, and you have to go kill him. But when I say concise narrative, I mean the main story mission of Taken King is you going after Oryx and getting rid of him. And I don't know if you have you had a chance to go through a slight spoiler warning, but it's kind of out there by this point. Have you gone through any of the missions with Cade talking to you, Nathan Fillion's character?
I haven't gotten very far at all, to be honest with you, and I haven't done any of the Taken King content. So I'm really hoping that it is as improved as I've heard that people have said, and I'm very hopeful. I'm not criticizing the Taken King content in particular because I don't have any experience with that. I'm sort of in general, not even really talking about Destiny, but in general talking about game design and how oftentimes people confuse this backstory and narrative for actual moment to moment story, but. So yeah, so I'm talking from a lot of ignorance about Destiny in particular, but go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I would just I would highly recommend, as somebody who loves narrative and storytelling, and Christian and I argue about this all the time, because like for me, that's why I play games is I want story, as opposed to even I mean the Destiny mechanics were great when it first came out. I mean, it's an incredible shooter. It's one of the best shooters I've ever played, but like, I don't necessarily play games to shoot things. That's just part of the process of the storytelling for me. And I feel like the Taken King specifically has created a very, very clear storyline beginning to end in the solo content. Like take all the multiplayer stuff aside. If you sit down and you play, and I've been driving my wife nuts because I wanted to see what happened in this game. And so this past weekend, man, I've been a terrible husband and a terrible dad because I've just been playing Destiny the entire time. And but it's for me, I was blown away as somebody who had written Destiny off completely. I was blown away with how well they walk you through the story missions in Taken King specifically. And there's incredible voice work in it as well, may I say.
well paid voice work. Sushi X in the chat room says Destiny has one of the best first person shooter mechanics right next to Call of Duty, Titanfall, and Halo. I would certainly not disagree with that. Christian, you've been sucked back into Destiny as well. You played a lot of it this week, right?
I mean, I haven't gone back to Metal Gear since I picked up Taken King.
Gasp!
I know. Exclamation point, white color from the side of your screen, all of those things. I did not pick up either expansion when they first came out, so I did the Legendary Edition or whatever it was that came with everything. I think the way that they released the Taken King in terms of a value proposition for digital owners is still crazy. But I got it on a good deal at Best Buy to do the whole thing, and I feel like I got my money's worth. But the content is it's incredible. I think that they have fixed a lot of the problems in the first, you know, vanilla Destiny. It really was go here, deploy Ghost. Ghost will do something, and then waves of guys will come at you, and then another wave, and it's taking me a little longer in another wave, and then you go here and do that. With the Taken King content, very little of the narrative is coming from your ghost. You're getting interesting discussion between characters and being led through a story. I think that the problem, a difficulty that this game has, is that it's meant to be played with others, and so there's a good chance that you will be talking to your friends because your friends and like being like shh, 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 okay, story, you know, I think you will miss things, but the way the levels unfold, the things you're able to do, it's easy to distill a game down cynically and say, yeah, you just go there and kill things. But that's kind of every first person shooter. Halo 4, Jeff, I remember you describing as pushing a button and then killing things.
Can I take it one step further though, Christian? I honestly feel, and tell me if you disagree, that Destiny, from a very fundamental design level, is sort of meant to be meditative. It's almost meant to be able to be a game that you can, that relaxes you, that you can play and shut off most of your brain, that you can just sort of do. And it's, you're hanging out with people you like and you're shooting stuff. And there's a feedback loop of pleasure, but it's not, doesn't require 100% of your attention. It doesn't require, maybe I'm completely wrong because I haven't played the high-end content that's super challenging and people will yell at me that does, but it feels to me like the game is more about just sort of being together and hanging out, no?
The grind feedback loop, I think, is. And I think that's something that Destiny 2.0 has done extremely well. I mean, I think I petered out on vanilla around level 20 or something like that. And there were times I would play for an hour or 2 hours and would make no substantial improvement to my character. Every single time I've sat down to play, now that Taken King is out or 2.0, I have come away with something that makes my character better. Whether it's a gun, gear, I actually level up because leveling up happens so much faster now, or more predictably, I should say, more traditional leveling up structures, that I find that rewarding. But yeah, it is. But that's also what pickup basketball is, right? Like, you're hanging out with your friends and you're trash talking a little bit and you run a play and you have some fun and you move on. That's what everything is if you're not playing it high level competitive.
Well, I guess, but I feel like it's that thing I always reference about leaning back entertainment and leaning forward entertainment. And I feel like it's, I don't know, maybe I'm speaking it, but.
Yeah, I think the brilliance of this game can do both. that there are moments like if I'm playing Crucible or multiplayer stuff, that is not a lean back experience at all, man. That is chaotic and requires specific attention and is just an absolute blast, right? But if I'm doing like early story content, then I can chill and kill things and go help my friends, you know, on my fire team and just like help them progress through the story. Right. But if again, like especially in the latest Taken King raid, like the end game content, like it absolutely is not a Netflix and chill sort of mentality, to steal from the chat room.
I don't think you know what Netflix and chill means, because there's nothing.
Oh, probably. Wait, that's not what it means.
That's not. Yes. Well, a lot of people in the chat room are also talking about raids, and I have not experienced a raid in Destiny yet for real. And I'm desperate to try that. I really, really want to do that. I'm very excited about, I want to be converted. So, yeah.
And then to piggyback and maybe bookend off of Chris's point, which I really, really agree with, is another thing that Destiny maybe suffers from, or maybe it's we as players choose to consume it, is that there are so many people that are prophets of Destiny that want to share their love for the game. So like Anthony Taormina, who's been on this show, is like, guys, play. I'll help you level up. I'll help you get through some stuff. Come on and play. And then what I think often you find yourself doing is that you're just following your shepherd and you're like, run, run, shoot, run, run, shoot. What do I do now? Yeah. Where do I go? Run, run, shoot. Instead of sitting down and then playing and exploring. So it makes it a lean back, because you have this guide who's max gear that can kill a boss in one shot. And then we're just like, woohoo, support. So it's a different experience.
You're not wrong.
Yeah, I would highly recommend for you to play solo through the story mission before getting your friends to come in and play with you personally.
Oh, interesting. Well, I'm still playing it. We'll probably be talking about it more next week. Also, Christian is referencing the fact that we streamed some of the play session. We did a couple hours worth. And if you wanted to, it was cool. We had a bunch of people hanging out with us. I really enjoyed that, and I want to do more of it. So my Twitch channel is Kanata Jeff with two N's and one T. So you should subscribe to that. I know, Christian, you have a Twitch channel as well, right?
Yeah, it's just Christian Spicer. The plan is to get back to Thursdays at like 1:30, 2 p.m., get it regular again. I took time off after kid number two was born and just talk about Miley Cyrus Wrecking Ball. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So what else is on your playlist, Chris?
Rocket League, per usual. I actually play Rocket League in tandem with Destiny, where I find that if I get frustrated in the Crucible, I'll switch over to Rocket League and play that for a little while to calm me down and then jump back in.
Interesting.
And then I also Heroes of the Storm. I don't know if you've heard of this game, Jeff, but it's a MOBA by Blizzard, or it's a brawler by Blizzard, and it's pretty great. I play Sylvanas and I love it. Also a game called Rivals of Aether, which is it's in Steam's why can't I think of the name of it? It hasn't come out
Greenlight?
Yet, but it's in the Greenlight. Hey, there we go. It's sort of like Super Smash Brothers, except 16-bit is the best way to describe it. And it's a bunch of little animals beating the crap out of each other, and it's a ton of fun. I highly, highly recommend you picking it up. It's like $15. As a fighting game enthusiast, I love trying new fighting games, and it's a blast.
Again, it's called Rivals of Aether, Aether.
Yes.
Cool. Yep. I'll have to check that out. You're playing that on PC, obviously, with Steam, right?
Yes, correct.
Cool. Christian, what about you? Tons of Destiny? Anything else?
Tons of Destiny. I have gone back and I'm still toiling away at Plague of Shadows, which is the Plague Knight DLC for Shovel Knight, which if you missed last week's show, that came out. It is free for every iteration of Shovel Knight. So if you have the game, check it out. I still have not been able to wrap my head around his movement, and he throws bombs instead of using the shovel as a sword. And I find myself struggling on bosses. Like, I had everything figured out for Shovel Knight. I knew my plan of attack, and I had to go watch a couple of guides to get through a couple of bosses. It's crazy how the littlest things can totally shift how you want to play a game. And I'm still playing. I'm living in a Shovel Knight world, man. But Plague Knight does not care. I am dying a lot, but it's fantastic. And myself playing and getting agitated and then listening to music before I can fall asleep. But it's free, so check it out. It's Plague of Shadows for Shovel Knight. It's free DLC. Jeff, what else? What else do you have going on? I know you, congratulations, by the way. I saw your Instagram. You are what, level five? Forgive my Heroes of the Storm speak, but you hit a milestone, right?
I wasn't going to talk about Heroes of the Storm, Christian. I even let Chris bring it up and not mention it because I didn't. You know, we had VR talk at the beginning. We had Destiny. It was like the perfect storm of stuff people think we talk about too much. So I was going to let that go. But yeah, I got my 300th ranked win this week.
Congratulations!
Actually, last night I got it. Last night. Thank you. Yeah. I play too much of that game. So I got 300. This is just in ranked mode. That doesn't count all the quick match games I've played, which is many more hundreds. Yeah, I did it in 588 games. So, you know, the goal with matchmaking is to get you at 500. The fact that I'm a little above 500, I'm pretty proud of. But I had a lot of other stuff on my playlist this week. I got a chance to go down and play the entire first episode of Minecraft Story Mode, which is the new Telltale Games adventure game set in the Minecraft universe. Very interesting. It is very much made for kids, you know, it's supposed to be appealing to adults as well, but you can definitely see it is geared straight at kids, and it is charming and fun, and it's neat how they've managed to take that Minecraft block world aesthetic and put it in a Telltale game and give it some personality and life. It's almost like watching an animated version of a Minecraft cartoon that you tune into on Saturday mornings. And it's that kind of fun. The main character, there's two main characters you can pick from to start the game, a male and a female. I picked the male. He's voiced by Patton Oswalt, which makes it very charming and fun as well. You know, that classic Telltale style where you're making choices, you know, in Walking Dead, you're making these big moral choices of who's going to live and who's going to die. In Minecraft Story Mode, you're deciding, like, who are you going to be better friends with? You know, like, are you going to be a cool friend or, like, a really cool friend? You know,
Is this Mean Girls the game?
No. I mean, they very want me to be very careful about spoilers, so I can't talk specifically about the story because the game hasn't come out yet. But basically, the idea is, you and your buddies are builders, and there's rival builders who build stuff in Minecraft. And so at certain points, you know, you can have the option of, like, butting up against the enemy team, and they're mean to you, but you can be nice back. And, you know, it's very much, like, you know, acceptable for kids. It's nice. There are some action sequences, although I don't even think you could use that term, but there are a few sequences where you have to swing your sword and attack stuff, and it's very binary. It's very simplistic. There's not much to it. There are a few puzzles. There's one at the end of the game that's a little bit difficult, switch puzzle, but for a kid it would be probably difficult, but a parent, not so much. It's very straightforward. And it's fun. There's some cool action sequences. It's got this Goonies vibe where you're this, you know, ragtag group of friends and you get in over your head pretty quickly. I don't think I would recommend it to any of my contemporaries as far as, you know, age group. But if you have a young kid that is into Minecraft, I think it's an easy win there. It's a fun game for them and it introduces some fun characters and it's in the world they already love. So yeah, it's cool. It definitely hits its target demo perfectly. I also got a chance to go down to the Oculus Kinect and play a few things. I got a chance to play more of Narcosis, which is the game that our friend Jeff Mattis is doing VO for, which is much improved since the last time I saw it. It's that survival horror undersea game. Man, it's creepy and scary. I was freaking out playing it. It's some really, really cool effects have been added now. It's, you know, playing it in the Oculus. You're inside a undersea diving suit the whole time. So it really, having the mask on your face really adds to the experience. And they have this thing now where, like, your breath, you can see your breath reflect on the visor in front of you. And you see, like, reflections of the readouts in front of you. It's really, really slick. So that's one to keep an eye on as well. But the game that totally blew me away at Oculus Kinect, I got to play the first two levels of Land's End, which is the new game from the developers of Monument Valley. And this is exclusive to VR. It's exclusive to Gear VR because it's a mobile game. It's meant to be a mobile game. And you literally play it with your head only. There is no controller. There is no input other than looking at stuff. And it is extraordinary. The idea is you play it in a swivel chair. So you're supposed to play it in like a desk chair that can swivel 360 degrees. And since the Gear VR has no wires, you can't get tangled in anything. So it works out really, really well. You're in this beautiful, idyllic island area, and there are little dots on your horizon that you can look at. And when you look at them, a little HUD dot appears, and then it shows you that you're pinpointing on that spot. And if you hold your vision on that spot long enough, a little reticle will spin, kind of like how they do in Destiny, where you hold the button down and it spins the circle around the button. And if you look at that spot long enough, you will move to that spot. You will glide gracefully to that new location. And then after you've done that a bit and you're exploring this island, you'll come to areas where you don't have a new dot to look at. You have to figure out how to manifest a new dot to look at. And usually you have to get past something. So there'll be these little dots on stones. And it's a very mystical environment. It feels very old and, you know, like Stonehenge, but sort of more tropical. And you realize that you can, if you stare at the dots, you can connect them it'll draw a little line. But there's only so much energy to be spent in connecting them. So you have to create a pattern that's the most efficient so that you have enough length of connection to get from dot to dot, to make the connection, to open up the new area, to move through it. So it's all about progressing through the environment by making these dot connections.
Quick question.
And then, oh, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Maybe it's about to answer it.
Go ahead.
Why VR? The game sounds great. You haven't sold me on it being VR.
Well, you're in, as I said, a swivel chair. So sometimes where you need to go is completely behind you or around the corner, or you're constantly swiveling around looking through the environment. You're in this environment and you're constantly looking for where to go next, how to get there, what to look at, and you're just looking at it with your eyes, and then if you hold your gaze on it, you move to that space. So after you've done that a little bit, then you start finding blocks that you can move with your mind. I'm telling you, this is as close as I've ever been to being Magneto in real life. It's awesome. And it only is awesome because it's in VR. Like, you could do this with a mouse, and I'm sure there's many games that have done it with a mouse, and it's fine and it's interesting. So there's these blocks that have a different sort of symbol on them. And if you look at that symbol, it sort of like latches onto that rock. And then if you move your head left or right, very subtly, you can pick the rock up and carry it with you or throw it. And it's all about just like staring at it, lifting your head slightly, and then moving your head in space. So you really feel like you're a magician or you're a mutant levitating an object with your mind and carrying it over to the area you need it to be in order to continue to create these dot connections to open up the next space. Dude,
Billy,
I don't know how
to clean up your room.
I'm trying.
Dude, you're just sitting there.
It's like as close as I've ever come to be a Jedi, move stuff with my mind or Magneto. It's an extraordinary experience. It's very cool.
Chris, this is you, right? I mean, I feel like the good thing about you on this show is that you can bolster, you can be a flying buttress to Jeff's VR. Whereas I feel like, great, whatever, doesn't justify the tech.
So you're telling me being Magneto or a Jedi doesn't justify the tech?
Staring at something and having it move with my eye does not justify the use case for this tech versus playing this game with the mouse and keyboard or a traditional controller.
Crazy, dude. When does it, Jeff, did they say when this was releasing? Is it going to be out for the holiday?
I don't think they have a specific date, but I think they're targeting for when the Gear VR launches. They want to be the killer app for Gear VR. And I'm telling you, I talked a lot when around E3, I got a chance to play Super Hypercube on the Sony VR, on the PlayStation VR. And to me, that was this perfect, simple idea that you grasp really well. You get it, and it's very simple, and it expresses itself in VR very efficiently, and you understand why it needed to be in VR and why being in VR makes it better. And I think this is that same thing. If you have somebody who has a Samsung phone and has the Gear VR headset, this is the app when you're in the park or whatever, and you're like, just walk over there, put this on, stand under that tree. You're going to have to rotate 360 degrees in order to play it. So just stand up. You will get it. You will get what makes this so special. I loved it. I thought it was awesome.
I was just told by someone in my office who apparently is watching that Land's End is due for release on October 30th and will be available via the Oculus Store.
There you go. Yeah, they really want to be that killer app for the Gear VR, and they want to be, you know, they want to be the thing that is on in all the commercials for Gear VR. They want to be the thing that people recommend, you know, oh yeah, if you got Gear VR, download Land's End. I think it's the perfect app for that because you don't need anything else. You don't need a controller. You don't need anything else. And you get it so quickly, and it's so simple, and it's beautiful. And the thing that I said to the developers too is what I loved about it is you're solving these puzzles, and the puzzles get, I only did the first two levels, which were pretty meaty, but the puzzles get pretty interesting, right? They're not super hard, but there's broken blocks that you have to reassemble with your mind and create the right patterns. So they get pretty intense. But the coolest thing is the reward for doing it correctly is you get to fly, right? It glides you to the next destination. And there was a part where I, you know, flew by a waterfall and I moved a thing in front of the waterfall with my mind and it prevented the water from cascading down on top of me. And dude, you're in this 3D environment, you're moving stuff with your mind, and then when you do it correctly, you get to fly.
Okay, question.
What else do I need to say?
I think I've distilled...
The killer app...
Go ahead, Chris. Go ahead.
I just want to say the killer app for VR is immersion. I mean, the fact that you feel like you're in a world is what will... Once, you know, it's going to take adoption, it's going to take people actually using the product, and it's going to take time, but immersion's what's going to get people to buy this product.
Immersion with simplicity and low cost of entry. I agree with you. And that's why I think VR is the future. I just think it's the
future,
much further out future than where we are. So here's my question that I think maybe distills my thoughts on current VR. So Jeff, this game is a system seller, device seller, whatever. Here's my question to you. Splatoon is an excellent game, reviewed by many as a 9 or 10 out of 10. Mario Maker is an excellent game, reviewed by many as an 8, 9, or 10 out of 10. Would you recommend someone go out and buy a Wii U right now?
Would I?
Yes.
I think that if you like Nintendo games, then you're going to find a lot to like with the Wii U, yeah.
So you're saying that the Wii U for gamers is a system that most gamers should own?
I mean, I don't know. I don't want to use the word should. I'm saying if you look at the stable of games they have now, I would say don't buy it for games you expect to happen in the future because you're going to be disappointed. I would say if you're into Mario Kart and Super Smash Brothers and the game, you know, all the games you've already mentioned, then go for it. Yeah, it's fantastic.
Now you're hedging a little bit. Chris, do you see the corner I'm trying to put you guys in where there's a
I am not willing to submit to your lawyering tactics.
There's a system out already that exists with incredible games that most people are saying don't buy, it's not worth your money, but yet here's a system that's not out yet with one potential decent flying experience that costs $600 to $700 to get into, and everyone's championing it like it's sliced bread.
No. I'm saying that if you've got a Samsung Galaxy phone or you're considering buying a Samsung Galaxy phone and VR sounds awesome to you and $99 to add the Gear VR headset, I think that's a pretty good proposition. And then this mobile game, which is probably going to be priced like a mobile game, I'm guessing it's probably going to be just a few dollars. I don't know their actual price point, but I don't think it's going to be any more than Monument Valley was. I'm not saying rush out and buy a phone to play this game. I'm saying if you need a phone and you want a phone and the Galaxy looks like a good phone, and for me, it's the first time that I really am tempted to get out of that Apple ecosystem, because there is something that is demonstrably better, that is a differentiator for the kinds of experiences that I can have on my phone, and that's freaking VR, dude.
Yeah, I think Oculus Connect 2 has confirmed that VR is a real platform that will have real software that has real developers creating awesome experiences, and that this is, Land's End is just one example of those experiences. I think when it comes out this year, it's going to be a part of the higher end of the market, but we're not looking at the 3DO, right? We're not looking at TurboGrafx-16. We're not looking at something.
I bought both of those, by the way.
That doesn't surprise me.
Don't go by me. I'm ruining your argument because I bought both of them.
Yeah. If you look back at those systems and you look back throughout history about the higher end systems that failed, it's because they didn't have developer support. And like Oculus is proving with these, specifically with these conferences and with these sort of events, that the developer support is there, and that in the near future, next year, you know, we're going to see some amazing immersive experiences come to this particular platform. That is why it's going to succeed now. It may not get to, you know, the middle market even, right? It's going to be in households that have every other single device. But that's still, I mean, that still can push a lot of units in this day and age.
I agree 100%. All right, let's move on, because I do want to get to tabletop time, because I know you've got some awesome stuff to talk about. But I do have to thank our second sponsor, which is Hover. Hover, oh my gosh, when you have an idea that you want to secure a domain name for, you want something catchy. You want something memorable. You want something that represents your online identity. And with Hover, you can find the perfect domain to bring your idea to life. It's easy. Just search for the domain you want, or just enter a few keywords, and Hover will show you the best available options and suggestions. They have a huge variety of domain extensions like .com, .net, .io, and country codes to best suit your needs. You'll get a smart control panel, built-in DNS, and you can even add a custom email or Google Apps if you want as well. Hover offers a valet transfer service to make it easy for you to move your domains for no additional cost. And they do all the dirty work to move your domain over from your current registrar. And to top it all off, Hover has real human beings available for support with no wait, no hold, no transfer phone service. If you got any problems, you just pick up the phone, you call, you talk to a human being. So go check out hover.com/5x5 to learn more and get the domain of your dreams. Thanks to Hover to support the show. Again, hover.com, hover.com/5x5.
I have to say that I use Hover a lot and love it.
Do you really?
Yeah, absolutely.
I hope you go to hover.com/5x5 when you do that.
Absolutely.
Please. All right, guys, let's carve out a little bit of tabletop time. Chris, you got some great board games here on your list of stuff that you've been playing on the tabletop. What do you want to start with?
Oh, man. So Gen Con wasn't that long ago. It was like a month ago, maybe, at this point.
Yeah.
I was able to get a really good haul out of, despite my wife's protests. Yeah, absolutely. So it's Indianapolis is only an hour away from Cincinnati. So
nice.
It was great. But I had a good haul. The top of that stack from Gen Con was Mysterium. Mysterium.
Did you get the English version?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
Ah.
So
I have the Polish version.
I can't imagine playing, because it took us forever to figure out how to play this game in English. I couldn't imagine trying to learn how to play it in Polish. In our area, I'm pretty infamous for having board game nights at my house, where we have about 50 people come and play board games till 3 or 4 a.m. And this game ended up sucking almost that entire night. We played last week, I think. But the game, it's incredible. The game itself, it's a collaborative game. You are a bunch of psychics and one person is the ghost. So it's asymmetric. And, the goal of the game is, it's very similar to Clue in the sense that you're trying to find, who murdered the ghost, you know, what location the murder happened, and what was the murder weapon. And then the ghost has to give you sort of clues with like a dream state, or they're cards that have art on them. And you have to interpret those dreams and try to figure out what the ghost is trying to tell you to move forward. That kind of covers it, right, Jeff? Is there anything you want to add about it?
Yeah, no, that's right on. Actually, Christian has played this as well, and he was the ghost. And I know that Christian didn't love it. I've heard that the English version has a new ending, a different ending that is actually more difficult, that you have to like vote on something or something.
Not that I can recall, but we've only played through it once, so I may not have played through it correctly. But I believe at the end we have to all vote whether or not that's the actual killer or something to that effect. But we had a moment in the game. I mean, I love board games where like epic moments happen, because those things typically don't go together, right? Like board games tend to be kind of chill, unless you're playing like Resistance or something like that. Then everyone's screaming at each other and you know, friends. We had a moment where we had two people left trying to figure out, you know, what the murder weapon was. We had 1 hour left, so this was our last hour, because you're on, it's a time based game. You only have, I think, like 7 rounds to kind of figure out everything. And we were on our last, it was the 11th hour. Two people hadn't figured out what their murder weapon was, which is you are assigned a character, location, and murder weapon, and you as a psychic are stating that is not who the killer is. So the cards that are left are who killed the ghost and where, right, and murder weapon. So two of our people hadn't figured out the murder weapon, and you know, last hour we get two cards from the ghost that kind of sort of made sense, and we had some ideas, and time was running out, and we were like, okay, I think we're going to do this. And then at the last second, somebody said, oh, here, there's like a rope in this particular card, maybe it's this. And then we switched it around right before time ran out, and the ghost was like, yeah, you guys got it right at the very last second. And the whole place cheered. And I mean, that's so rare to find in board games. And the fact that Mysterium created that moment was epic for me. So I've been digging that big time.
Right on. Not exactly the experience we had, Christian. Christian was very frustrated with us. Like, why don't you idiots know that I'm showing you the card with a...
It's dignity. It's clearly a picture of dignity.
Yeah, it's rough because the game's all about trying to communicate without being able to say anything, and you think you're being very clear, but the cards are so enigmatic and the artwork is so strange and bizarre, it really is open to interpretation, which is what makes the game fun and also frustrating to the ghost.
Yeah, it's especially fun when like you're playing with somebody that you know really well, and because you know how they think and they know how you think, you can kind of take bets on, okay, are we on the same page or not? And to me, that mechanic, the fact that, like, does this person know me or does this person not know me, plays into the game so much. Cause there were times, like, I was one of the first person to get through, you know, all my three different items. And that was because the ghost, I'm like, okay, I know the way that he thinks. He's, you know, he's counting the numbers on this, or the number of items on this particular card. He doesn't care about the color. He doesn't, you know, and like, that kind of mental intuition is just, it is so much fun for a game like this.
Any other games you want to bring up?
Yeah, just real quick. Welcome to the Dungeon is a, it's sort of a mini game. It's 2 to 4 players, I think. But you essentially pick a character to run through a dungeon. But everyone in the group is stacking the dungeon with enemies and then taking away equipment for that character. And last person in the turn is the one that has to run that character through the dungeon. Really quick, nice little mini RPG kind of party game that is an absolute blast. It's like 10-12 bucks or something on Amazon. Highly, highly recommend it.
Yeah, it's one of those new micro games, and it's very similar to a game that I talked about, I don't know, several weeks ago now, called Gauntlet of Fools, where it's sort of like, how it's a push your luck, like, oh, I can beat the dungeon with less stuff on. It's pretty clever, pretty interesting little game, I thought, for a very inexpensive price point. So, yeah, it's called Welcome to the Dungeon. Very cool. I wanted to talk a little bit about a new role-playing game experience that I tried for the first time this week. I've talked about my D&D group over and over that I'm DMing, but we hadn't met for a while. And so I said, hey, it's been a while since we've been doing this D&D campaign. Can we try something new this week? And I bought from Fantasy Flight, I bought this thing called The End of the World. And there are 5 books, not all of them are out yet, but the End of the World line of role-playing games are the same rule set, but there's different scenarios. There's like the robot uprising. There's the Cthulhu death from the gods. There's going to be a whole bunch of them. The one I got was the zombie apocalypse. So these are just all sort of famous ways the world can end. And each book is a different, very characteristic way the world can end, and different scenarios that make up that genre, sort of from books or movies or whatever. The difference about this role-playing game from D&D or any other role-playing game I've ever played is that you don't make up a character like a dwarf warrior or a barbarian or anything. You start the end of the world as yourself, and you create a character that is as close to you as you possibly can, and it's about how long you can survive the apocalypse as you and your group of friends who are actually you. I'm telling you guys, this was one of the most fun times we've ever had. What I did, because I was running the game, I bought the book, I read the book. I didn't tell anybody what we were doing. I just said, trust me, guys, because the cool thing about these games is that character creation is part of it. Like, you show up and you create your character as part of the game. Usually in these games, you'd create your character ahead of time and show up to play. But the way character creation works is you have some stats and you put points in those stats, but then everybody else votes on whether they think you're accurately representing yourself in those stats. And they can vote whether you think you gave yourself too high or too low or just about right in all these stats. And the stats are like empathy and vitality, sort of your ability to like lift stuff or whatever. Your charisma, stuff that is sort of usual role-playing stats, but you're trying to create as accurate a representation of the actual person. And then after you've voted, you get these traits that are very much real-world traits, good and bad. And depending on how the voting goes, you get additional good traits or additional bad traits. And the traits can be as simple as like you have a tummy ache today, or you're afraid of heights, or you're particularly funny, or you're good at, you're really good at shooting a gun. Maybe in real life you really are, or maybe in real life you are good with computers. Any of these traits, you get to assign them to yourself, and people can suggest them to you. The book has a lot of examples, but you're trying to create as accurate a representation of yourself, and the equipment that you have, wherein in D&D you would have swords and shields and armor. The equipment is anything you have on or near your person at that moment. So like your cell phone, your car keys, maybe you have a book bag with some stuff in it. You're just yourself in this moment. And then I started the game like we all got together to play D&D, and everybody was there and everybody was wondering where Jeff was, because Jeff didn't show up. Usually he's here by now. And where is Jeff? And then, so some spoilers for one of the episodes of this book, if you're interested in playing it. There are various scenarios, 5 different scenarios. One of the scenarios is this meteor shower causes radiation and it causes things to come back from the dead. So everybody's hanging out at the thing, and then meteors start landing in the yard that are glowing green. And so the guys were like, well, we stand up and we go and we check it out. We look out the window. And then I had my car drive up outside, and they say, oh, hey, it's Jeff. And then a giant meteor came and landed on my car, killing me. And so, of course, they all like ran out to see if I was okay. still not knowing what game we were playing, like what was going to happen. And then I like reanimated from the radiation and started attacking them. And then, so they're dealing with the fact that their friend is a zombie. And so they run into the house and they're getting, like, improvising different weapons. Dan Trachtenberg, who was playing with us, pulled down the curtain rods and was using that as a weapon. And there's stuff in the game for, like, representing all that stuff in the game mechanics. And then they clubbed me to death. They killed me. And then I had a police car pull up just as that happened. And so they had to try to explain to the police officers what was happening. And the police officers think they're crazy that there's no zombies. It was so fun and so grounded in a reality. Unlike, you know, it's fun to create these fantasy worlds and put people in mystic locations and castles and whatever. But when you can actually reference the actual house you're in, you can say, oh, I walk over there and I pick up that thing because that thing really is over there. It is an extraordinary experience. And then we got, you know, as the game progressed, they were trying to figure out what they were going to do. And as the zombie apocalypse started happening and more people were rising from the dead and the, you know, the city around them was falling into chaos, they were referencing real places like, okay, well, we're going to drive down the street and we're going to go over here. And we all were on the same page about the geography of the world and what stuff existed in it because we all actually live there. I've never had an experience like that. And it was awesome.
Screw VR, Jeff, you have just brought about actual reality, and it's the best game there is.
Yeah.
It's such an awful dad joke.
Well, I am a fantastic dad, so as a fantastic dad, I am entitled to making plenty of awful jokes.
Jeff, did you find that you had to have a lot of investment up front as a DM for this?
Well, I'll tell you this, the book that you buy has very little in terms of actual scenario. The scenarios are well written and interesting, but they give you like this timeline of how things happen and they give you other characters to interact with, but there's very little in terms of like moment to moment knowing where to send your players. It really is very open. And I think that the thing I had to embrace is this is going to be a much more of an improvisation than any other DMing I've ever done, in the sense that these people, we're all in the real world. We all know exactly what's around us. So they're going to be able to go completely wherever they go. And the book basically just has like stock generic locations, like a hospital or a park or a freeway. And so when they go, okay, we're going to go, you know, we're going to try to get supplies. Like they decided they were going to go to the veterinary hospital that's down the street to get some medical supplies. So I just sort of adapted that to what I knew of the veterinary hospital. I adapted the hospital that's in the book. So it definitely required much more on the fly thinking, but because you're dealing with locations that everybody is familiar with, because they're real, it's much easier. So the mechanics of actually how you play, the dice rolling stuff, I found to be very loose and not the cool. It's all about it's all six d6s, so it's just a series of d6s, and you add more d6s for positive things that can affect your die roll, and you add more negative d6s for negative things that can affect your die roll, and then you can get traumas and stresses and stuff from bad rolls. But I found that to be really loose and very open to interpretation. It was sort of like it was an interesting system that just allowed you to put in whatever personality quirks you wanted. I thought it was pretty good, but it didn't have the like rigorous structure of a D&D where, you know, you're in battle and you're doing stuff. So I think some people didn't like that as much, but the story overall was so fun that everybody walked away going, that was one of the most fun nights we've ever had playing role playing. I really want to have you guys do it, Christian. I want to have you do it with a group. But now you kind of know. Part of the fun is the surprise. Like I really suggest that people don't tell their group what they're about to do before they do it.
Yeah, I'm game. I mean, it sounds fun. For me, it is. It's always just the time commitment and carving away. Like I love couch co-op or playing games with people in the same room, and board gaming requires that. But it's just balancing that with everything else in life, unfortunately. But I would love to club you with a with the curtain hanger.
It was disturbing how quickly they were willing to kill me off.
He might be a zombie. Wait, guys, I think he's fine. No. Let's just kill him.
I was like, wait a minute, would you guys really do this? If you basically what happened was like they saw me dead, and then I reached out and grabbed my friend's arm and squeezed it. I was like, you would start attacking me? Wouldn't you think, oh my gosh, maybe he's alive, maybe we can save him? They're like, no, man, zombie apocalypse. We knew it was going down. It's like, fine.
Yeah. First guess is always get a baseball bat.
I guess so. Sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's called End of the World. It's a series from Fantasy Flight Games, and it is there's a whole bunch of there's 5 books, and all of them are out yet. All right, guys, let's wrap up this episode of fun. I really have enjoyed this one. Thanks for being on, Chris Bergman. Where can people follow your stuff this week?
Thanks for having me, you guys. This has been an absolute blast. You can find me. You asked where people can find me, right?
Yes.
Yes. On Twitter at Chris Bergman is probably the best place to get a hold of me. Please, by all means, if you have kids, especially kids age 4 to 12, download Chore Monster at choremonster.com. I think those are 2 places to check me out.
Awesome. We do have the parting gift coming up, but Christian, where can people find you this week?
Online, it's always great on Twitter at Spicer. Apparently no EO, but I still enjoy using their service. It's at Spicer. And then October's approaching quickly. I have a bunch of shows in October, starting on Thursday, Sketch Melt at Nerd Melt in Los Angeles. Friday, Trifecta at UCB Sunset. Saturday, I don't know where that is yet. That's doing a show with Dean Del Rey and Brian Callen. It's going to be great. Anyway, things that aren't in LA. Oh no, more LA stuff. The 6th, I'm at the Comedy Store. 7th, the 8th is Improv versus Stand Up at UCB Franklin. All of this stuff though is easily found by following me on Twitter at Spicer. Those are LA shows. If you're in LA, tweet at me and I will tell you where I am. Oftentimes, I don't know where I'm going to be that night until that night, because that's how comedy often works in LA. And other times you tell me you're going to come to a show and then they change the time on me and I go up early, but then we go to Carney's and eat dinner and it's still fun.
It is fun. That's right.
We'll get to the parting gift right now. I do want to tell people that you can follow me on Twitter at Jeff Cannata with 2 N's and 1 T. Or you should check out the / filmcast at /filmcast.com. And we have concerns at wehaveconcerns.com. Also, please check out our subreddit. Hang out there. There's a cool community of people there at 5x5dlc.reddit.com. And you can send us emails at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. What I would like this week is whether it's worth ditching our live feed to have better audio, because my understanding is that from reading the chat is that Skype has been particularly bad this week, and it was particularly bad last week. And if the weird hiccups and stuff are so annoying for downloadable listeners, I want to know, and I want to know if it's better to have that feedback. I love the feedback from the live listeners. But if we need to start recording just locally and uploading the show for download only, let me know. Because I love having people give us their suggestions in real time and have us, add things to the conversation in real time in the chat. But if the end product is hard to listen to, it might not be worth it. Okay, so let's get to the parting gift, guys. We got stuff to recommend to people. Hey, give us a suggestion of what to do this week. Give us a parting gift. This is your parting gift. Chris, do you have a suggestion for people to help them get through their week?
I have, this one's a little bit, probably a little bit further than a week, but my suggestion is to go to conferences. Whether it be game conferences or industry conferences or whatever, just find an event, plan it, go there. I have my career completely shifted when I went to South by Southwest in 2007 specifically. And I've made some of the most amazing, wonderful friends at things like PAX and Gen Con and GDC. And I can't say enough how much going to these events. And I mean, like, I understand that it can be challenging from a financial standpoint. We ended up when we did that year's South by, me and a buddy ended up sleeping on somebody's couch that we met on the internet. This is before Airbnb. We drove 22 hours straight to get there. So I just think the amount of impact that 3 days can have on your life is pretty substantial. And so my parting gift is go find an event to go to and go to that and meet people and have fun.
Awesome. Yeah, I can definitely agree with that. Amazing experiences. Christian, how about you?
I'd mentioned the comic before. It's called The Map, and it's by Chad Kavanaugh and Grunt 1B Studios. But I am also a fan of graphic novels or collections. And volume one of The Map is now available, which collects the first 6 issues, I believe, in a nice new cover and some new artwork in there as well. It is called The Map, and it is by Chad Kavanaugh. The first volume is available now if you prefer to read your comics that way, like I do. So check it out.
My parting gift is a show you definitely have heard of, but maybe you're not currently watching. If you've dropped off of South Park, can I remind you how amazing South Park is? Season 19 just started, the first 2 episodes I watched, and it is as good or better than it has ever been. Still so smart, so biting, so fiercely fearless. I can't even believe that these guys are still this good at what they do almost 20 seasons later. And now they have introduced this new thing in South Park, which is amazing that they're willing to do. And that's continuity. Each episode in a season carries over, and the stuff that happened from the last episode still happened. So not only are they writing these things like at the last minute, but they're incorporating stuff and setting stuff up over a long series arc. This season has been ridiculously, incredibly bold and offensive in the best possible way. I recommend it. If you're not watching South Park season 19, you should be. All right, guys, that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks to Chris Bergman and Christian Spicer. Thanks to the folks at 5x5 for making this show possible. Thank you, everyone in the chat room. I see the outpouring of people saying, keep the live chat. I love it. I appreciate you guys. I love having the live chat. I love the input that you bring to the show. Thank you to everyone who's downloaded this and is listening to it now. You're the best. We appreciate you. We will be back next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.
Hello, America. It's your new favorite podcast here.
Yes, it's James and Andy, 2/4 of the British podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do facts. We do weird facts, fun facts, facts you've never heard before. James, give us a fact.
Did you know you may be able to cure chronically blocked noses with a snot transplant?
Lovely, lovely facts.
If you want to hear us, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We'll see you there.